minutes later, Sam was thinking that he might have been just a bit arrogant in starting to make plans. Arba had warded the warehouse down against Sam's powers, which he ought to have anticipated. And then she'd smashed him and Dean up pretty good before tying them to separate pillars, like sacrifices lined up for processing. His only consolation was that she hadn't said anything about him to Dean, which meant that she was keeping her options open. Dean got angriest when she admitted that she'd just picked two random people from Lawrence in order to draw them in. Sam felt the same rage. The victims weren't players. They'd done nothing, and she'd just reached out and swatted them. Arba watched him twitch in his bindings and laughed, the same musical sound that had turned so many heads in the bar earlier. "Why don't you kill us already?" Dean asked. Arba crossed back over to him. "I guess it's true that the pretty ones never need to think. Why would this be a trap for you two kids?" "It's a trap for John Winchester?" Sam blurted without thinking, because if Arba had just fucked his face up as a side effect, he was going to... "Wow," Dean said, snapping him back to rationality. "Newsflash, bitch. Your cunning plan sucks. Even if Dad was in town, which he's not, he wouldn't walk into something like this. He's too good." Arba smiled. "He is pretty good, I'll give you that." She straddled Dean's legs and sat down, pressing heavily against his crotch. Sam decided that she had officially taken a side, and it wasn't his. "But you, sweetness, he can't leave you in trouble." She ground down and put her hands on Dean's chest, squeezing, bringing her mouth to his neck and angling her whole body so that Sam could see her lick from collarbone to ear. Dean refused to flinch, but his head thunked back against the post and his nostrils flared in disgust. "Get off him," Sam said, every word outlined in fire. "Why?" she asked. Her hand disappeared behind Dean's back and returned with Dean's second favorite knife. She swung her leg off of Dean and stood, moving swiftly back to Sam. Mouth quirked in what could have been a charming smile, she knelt in front of him, idly slapping the flat of the knife against her palm. "That's your best shot? Have your little hunter cut free while I'm distracted?" "No," Sam said, and felt the last strands of the bindings part against his own knife. One thing was obvious. Father and everyone behind him, demon or psychic, had vastly overcommitted to mystical weapons over physical ones. He shoved the knife deep into Arba's gut, twisting. It wouldn't slow her down much, but it wasn't wasted. While she was still bringing her hands in to protect herself, he grabbed her shoulders and slammed their heads together, which hurt like a motherfucker, but sent her to the floor. "Get the altar!" Dean yelled. That was smarter than running for Dean, but he didn't have to like it. With one shove, he sent the table over, beads and bones and hearts flying everywhere. He stomped his boot down on the Davis symbol painted on the altar cloth and twisted, smearing it out of true. Arba screamed rage. All light and air left the room for half a second, leaving Sam gasping as he stumbled back toward Dean. Arba was trying to beat him there, but a figure coalesced out of the shadows and grabbed her. She kicked and cursed in Sumerian as she was dragged across the floor. The Davis shook her like a noisemaker at a New Year's party. Sam blinked blood out of his eyes, dropping painfully to his knees so that he could reach the ropes, still keeping Dean in place. Just as the Deva pulled Arba through the window in a shower of glass and wooden struts. Sam helped Dean to his feet and they rushed over to the window, the night wind chill against the drying blood on Sam's face and neck. Arba was sprawled on the sidewalk, her broken limbs twisting her into the shape of the rune for fate. Her injuries wouldn't stop her long. "I think she's possessed," he said. Dean gave him a funny look. It would, Sam realized, had been trivial to invoke the Lord's name against her at any time. He'd been holding back in instinctive concealment of his own secrets. She didn't seem to react much to the gut wound, and that was Sumerian she was using on the way out. If you automatically go back to a language 4,000 years older than Christ when you're under stress, I'm thinking you're a demon. It didn't take long to reclaim the bags of weapons Arba had kicked into the corner, but when they got out to the street, the body was gone. "Next time," Dean said, Exercise first. Ask questions later. Sam nodded, and they limped off. Back at their room, Dean opened the door, and the first thing Sam saw was the outline of a man standing by the window. Sam had his gun aimed at the center of the man's torso before Dean got the light on. "Dad?" Dean said, his voice full of fear and wonder. The man turned, and even through the beard, Sam saw it, the angry shadow of the man in Dean's pictures, the same lines around his eyes as were starting to form around Dean's. But John Winchester's eyes were narrowed with intense suspicion. Dean dropped the bags and crossed the room in seconds, stopping inches away from his father and hesitating, until his father reached up to pull him into a hug. Dean pressed his cheek into John Winchester's shoulder. Sam could see the muscles in his back working through his shirt as he squeezed. "It was a trap, Dad, I'm sorry," Dean said, the words blurred. Sam carefully put his bags down, then rested the gum on top of it. "It's all right, I thought it might have been. Who's this?" Dean pulled away, his hands still lingering on Winchester's shoulder, and turned his body back towards Sam. "Dad, this is Sam Marshall. He's a hunter. We've been working together for about 9 months. Sam nodded in greeting, wishing he still had that gun just to have something to do with his hands. Dean's use of hunter had sent a warm shiver through him. "We need to talk," Winchester said. Dean began to look around the room, then stopped. He took a few steps back from his father. The light was too bad to tell, but Sam would have bet just about anything that he turned bright red. They hadn't exactly cleaned up before they left, and Winchester had to have been in here long enough to see, and probably smell, what had been going on. But that wasn't where Winchester was going. Not exactly. "This is family business, Dean." He glanced quickly at Sam, then returned his focus to his son. "Private." Sam prepared himself to leave and take a calming walk around the block. Dean would tell him later, and so he could afford to let the man get away with ordering his son around like... No, it was a mistake to compare him to father. John Winchester's words had no threats curling around them like smoke, only the simple assumption of obedience. Then Dean opened up a whole new heading under the category of, "Dean Winchester is braver than you." He closed the distance between them and grabbed Sam's hand, squeezing hard. "No, sir," Dean said. John Winchester gaped at Dean's hand with roughly the same expression Sam imagined he himself was wearing. Sure, it was relatively obvious that they weren't exactly living the chaste life of the odd couple, but Dean was saying a lot more than that, at least in Winchester speak. Dean's fingers were hot, and his palm was sweaty, but his jaw was as set as if he were facing down a pissed-off ghost. Rush swelling through Sam's chest didn't dissipate even when he realized that this might complicate their access to whatever John Winchester knew. He met Dean's father's eyes, trying not to add any more challenge than necessary, just wanting him to know that Dean was not alone. At last, Winchester exhaled. His own hands came up as if he were staring into the barrel of a gun. "All right, then." His eyes were shining, the way Dean's always did when he was in deep emotional territory. "I saw an all-night diner a block over," Sam offered. The diner reminded Sam of nighthawks, glaring yellow brightness that didn't dispel the loneliness of a dark night, but maybe that was just Chicago. They hadn't spoken on the way over, after Sam had pointed them out in the proper direction. John Winchester nodded pleasantly at the waitress who seated them, then waited for her to retreat. He cleared his throat and addressed Dean. "You've told them about the yellow-eyed demon?" Sam twitched, wanting to say something like, "Yeah, he's passed on all 3 sentences you've ever said to him about it." But Dean's knee brushed up against his, and he only nodded along with Dean. "I've been tracking down leads. I'm close, very close, to finding a weapon that will enable you to kill him. Permanently. Not just exercise." Sam was silenced by the shock, not for the same reasons that Dean was. If that was even close to true, the man would have almost incalculable power. And, more importantly, that weapon was their way out. It could... Sam could... save Dean. He wanted to demand to hear all about it, but he bit down hard on the inside of his cheek, and sure enough, Dean did the right thing. "What is it, Dad? The weapon?" Dean sounded cracked open with hope, like some worn-down rock that turned out to be full of crystals inside. Winchester shook his head. "I can't tell you. It's too dangerous." "Dad!" "No, son." Dean bowed his head. "Yes, sir," he mumbled, then said something unintelligible and stood, which meant that Sam had to get out of the booth. Dean stumbled off towards the bathroom sign in the back of the diner, and they both watched him go. Sam took a couple of deep breaths. He could whammy Winchester now. He was unlikely to get a better opportunity. But there was still the problem of finesse, and not only could Sam not risk a failure to extract all the relevant details, Dean was likely to get a little upset if his father turned into a zombie while he was pulling himself together in the bathroom. Instead, he sat down and stared across the table. "So," John Winchester said, and the expression in his eyes had nothing to do with hunting demons, and everything to do with a parent sizing up a suitor, which was so farcical that it almost made Sam's stomach turn. "How long have you and Dean been together?" His tone was weirdly polite, and Dean had already reported on when they'd met, so he was clearly asking the more intimate question. Sam shrugged, then schooled his expression into something more placating. "It was gradual," he said. With nothing obvious to say, he shut his mouth. Let Winchester figure out how to keep the conversation from dying, if he cared about the guy his son was fucking. "Dean isn't very experienced," Winchester began. It was so very tempting to correct him on that, but instead Sam merely curled his hands into fists under the table, using the pain of his nails cutting into his palms to ground himself. It's not that you're a... He's always thrown himself into things. It makes him easy to hurt. Dean had clearly gotten more than bone structure from his father. That incoherent little speech sounded like it had grated like a rasp on the way out. "Well, good. With all due respect, we both know who's hurt Dean more." Winchester rocked back an inch or so. Sam realized that Winchester's hands were also concealed under the table. He wondered whether there were two guns aimed at his crotch right now, or only one. "I don't know what Dean's told you." Winchester's face was stiff underneath his beard, his eyes narrowed. Sam shook his head. "About you? Not a damn word. Your son grew up strong and loyal, and I guess that's some sort of testimony about you. But you broke him apart like you were spitting logs when you left him. I'm looking out for Dean now." Sam couldn't interpret all of the shades of anger and grief running over Winchester's face, settling down at last into a dull burn. "Fair enough," Winchester said, in an impressively even tone. "You planning on getting in the way of hunting down this demon? Might be dangerous." Was the implication supposed to be that Sam was selfishly interested in Dean's safety, or that Sam was a coward? Didn't matter. "It's not the killing that worries me, sir." He sensed Dean coming within earshot then, and it was fortunate that Winchester spotted Dean at the same time and shut up. The resumed meal was just about as uncomfortable as Sam could have imagined. After Dean started turning his head between the two of them every 5 seconds, looking like someone just nailed a kitten to his steering wheel, Sam sucked it up and did his best to emanate goodwill. Winchester eventually managed to do the same. Sam could tell he was an excellent con man. And by the end, Dean was happy enough to order an ice cream sundae. Observing Dean in dessert heaven was a temptation no man could have resisted, so Sam let his lips curl up just a little, knowing that Winchester was watching and drawing the appropriate conclusions. But hell, half the diner was staring at Dean. Winchester abandoned Dean in order to protect him. Dean professed to understand and even agree. He nodded and stirred and stared out at nothing with wet eyes after Winchester had gone. Sam understood why Dean might want to think that inflicting pain was a sign of paternal love. Hell, he'd felt the same way when Father had explained, all those times, about the true meaning of all his punishments. Difference was, Sam had grown to see the relish in Father's eyes. Now, Winchester didn't seem to be enjoying his solo quest, but he still made Sam want to scream. So, fear for Dean makes you weak, and your genius solution is to keep yourself ignorant about all the danger he's in? Some accident of fate gave you Dean. Dean! And all you can think about is people 20 years dead? If Sam could have explained that Dean was already a specific target, maybe his father wouldn't have fled. But if the man had been rational, then Sam wouldn't have needed to regret his inability to explain. So it wasn't Sam's fault. Anyway, Sam wanted him gone. Dean had gotten over his abandonment before, and could again. If Winchester did manage to get his hands on a weapon that could kill Father, he'd be very useful. And then, perhaps, his utility would end. "I gotta say, I'm impressed by your initiative," Dean said from the driver's seat. "Hellhoundslayer.com?" Sam shifted restlessly in his seat. "What can I say? I feel like killing something." Dean chewed his lower lip between his teeth. Sam guessed that he'd just been a tad too honest. Their encounters with Arba and John Winchester had left him bloodthirsty, yes, and the local legend seemed intriguing enough. He wanted the simple satisfaction of getting rid of a spirit that preyed on innocence. Which was probably why the Hell House turned out to be the fault of other innocents, children playing with spirit sigils they didn't understand, creating a tulpa out of the power of online belief. Not that Sam thought that Father would rule over a well-organized world of sunshine and puppies, not unless the puppies were staked out to die of thirst in the desert anyway, but Jesus, people were stupid. The tulpa nearly decapitated Dean with its newly imagined axe before Sam was able to draw its attention. For reasons possibly known only to Tibetan mystics, the TK worked on the axe, but not on the tulpa itself, so Sam found himself up against a wall, getting choked, while Dean improvised with lighter fluid. At least the tulpa didn't have any better idea of its own vulnerabilities than they did. When Dean yelled and waved his makeshift flamethrower at it, it let Sam go long enough that they escaped before the flames engulfed the house. "What do we do if the legend changes?" Sam wondered, as they watched a section of the roof collapse. "Come back, I guess." Dean caught Sam's dissatisfied expression. "Makes you think, how many of the things we hunt only exist because people believe in them?" "People should believe in something else," Sam muttered. Dean slung his arm across Sam's shoulders. That's just, you know, human nature, thinking there's still mysteries in the world or proof of life after death. A lot of people need that. The top story of the house fell in, with a crunch audible over the crackle of the flames. "I don't get why that makes anybody feel better," Sam admitted. "As far as I've seen, the afterlife sucks. Tormented ghosts and demons from hell. Wouldn't it be better, safer, if it all just ended? If you could just be done when it's your time? People delude themselves, thinking they'll be the lucky ones, the saved." Dean's thumb stroked against his neck. "At least we know how to bring them some peace," he offered. "When I go, I want to be salted and burned. You're right. You go out, you should get a real end." Sam turned his head. The fire reflected in Dean's eyes, brightening the green of his pupils to tiger fierceness. "Not anytime soon." He turned so he could cup Dean's cheek in his hand, brushing his thumb across Dean's lower lip. Dean's mouth opened slightly under his touch. "You know," Dean began, lame protest, before Sam pulled him close and then pulled him down, right there in the grass, the heat from the fire warming them as the house groaned and spat and burned. They had to run for the car, holding their jeans up one-handed, when the fire engines finally arrived. The legend of Mordecai Murdoch disappeared from the internet. There were girls in Richardson, Texas, who'd lived through their would-be suitor's attempts to scare them. Sam would never know them, or want to, and they'd never know him, but he'd save them anyway. Coordinates again? Sam could practically taste his own venom that time. Dean pounded the heels of his hands against the steering wheel. If you're coming, don't bitch about it, all right? Of course I'm coming to. He found the correct square on the map. Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Did you ever think that maybe he's my father, and I get to decide whether he's treating me wrong? No, he said, which surprised a laugh out of Dean. The billboard that whipped by promised free wireless at the next exit. Hey, let's grab lunch, see what we can find out about this hunt, about which I am not bitching. Dean kept his slight smile, and Sam didn't say anything to get rid of it, even when he threw his hands up in frustration at the total lack of reported trouble in Fitchburg. When they actually arrived, it took several hours to see the problem. Late afternoon, and the streets were empty of kids. Sam sweet-talked the woman overseeing her daughter on the swings, all alone, and found out that there had been a recent wave of sickness among the town children. Only 5 or 6 were in the hospital, but parents were worried, keeping the healthy ones isolated. Dean didn't have CDC badges for them, but Sam had learned enough now to know that nobody actually read what was written on the badges. At least now, his Homeland Security ID had an actual picture of him. He talked their way past the duty nurse and interviewed the doctor in charge, Heidecker, while Dean went through the charts looking for anything suggestive of the supernatural. The children's immune systems had simply collapsed, one family at a time. Sam used TK to get in the Tarnover house, showing off for Dean. I could have done that in 10 seconds, Dean grumped, but Sam could tell that he saw the potential. On the outside of Bethany Tarnower's window ledge, Sam found an elongated black handprint, like a shadow frozen in place. When he leaned closer, he smelled rot, and he thought that he saw a cluster of fly eggs at one of the junctions between the fingers. I'm ruling out pneumonia, he said. What the hell leaves a handprint like that? Dean pushed past him, inspecting the ledge. It's a striga, he said, as if his voice was coming from somewhere very far away. He wants me to finish the job. What the hell is a striga? He thought Dean had been careful to tell him about everything huntable. It's kind of like a witch, I think. Now Dean sounded even worse, like he'd been gut-shot. His tentativeness was another red flag. Sam knew that he'd sort of promised not to complain about John Winchester's decision to send them here, but really, this was getting fucked up fast. I've never heard of a striga, he prompted. It wasn't in the journal. He hunted one before, in Fort Douglas. I was, maybe 10. It got away. Thus, finished the job. Except that according to Dean, nothing evil that John Winchester found ever walked away from him. Now Sam seriously regretted snarking earlier, because Dean would, not unfairly, interpret almost anything he asked as an attack on Dean's father. He settled on a gentle tone and a vague prompt. What else do you remember? Nothing, Dean said immediately. I was a kid. A kid who'd been bullseyeing targets for years. A kid who dropped his first match into an open coffin at age 8, and at 10 was already learning how to drive. Sweet mother fuck. The only thing for it was to work the job as fast as possible, and do as much of the work as possible by himself. Let's get out of here, he suggested. The surly pre-adolescent working the counter at the motel quailed under Sam's black look and gave him the key to the closest room. Once they were there, Dean busied himself with weapons maintenance, but he didn't do it in his usual orderly fashion, instead pulling a chair up to the bed and laying all the guns out across the mattress, drifting from one piece to another as if he kept forgetting which one he wanted. Sam hit the databases. The usual sources were nearly barren, but one reference took him deep into Eastern European folklore repositories. A striga, it developed, was an evil entity that fed off of life force, preferably youthful life force. He got to the end of the article he'd found and stared at the screen. Dean, he said, it says here strigas are invulnerable to all weapons devised by God and man.
Dean's head snapped up. "That's not right," he said. Sam swallowed down his instinctive desire to demand more. After a moment, Dean put his pistol down on the bedspread. "She's vulnerable when she feeds. Catch her while she's eating, and you can blast her with consecrated iron, I think." "Do you know how strange you're asking?" was what he wanted to ask. "How do you know that?" was what he did ask. Dean picked at a thread that had come loose on the bedspread. "Dad told me." After that, their room seemed to have no air. They both slept badly, slamming into each other every time one of them shifted or turned. In the morning, they were on their way to breakfast when they saw the motel kid again, all his attitude lost in dejection as he sat outside the motel office. Dean, of course, stopped to talk to him and found out that his little brother, whom Sam had never seen, but Dean apparently had, was the newest kid to be hospitalized for pneumonia. "It's my fault," the older brother, Michael, said miserably. "How?" Dean asked. Michael raised his head, caught perhaps by the fact that Dean didn't immediately dismiss his confession as the self-centeredness of a child. "Should have made sure the window was latched." Dean leaned closer, bracing his hands on his knees. He would have gotten on his knees, Sam was sure, if the kid had been a couple years younger. "Listen, I can promise you this is not your fault, okay?" "It's my job to look out for him," Michael said, like his guts were hanging out. Dean nodded like he understood. Michael's mother came out then, and Dean managed to talk his way into giving her a ride to the hospital. She insisted they'd take her car, and Dean didn't even balk at driving an automatic. He was deep in the need to hunt. Before he left, he grabbed Sam and leaned in close. "I want this thing dead." Sam couldn't say a word. Sam drove the relatively short distance to the library at U, Wisconsin-Madison. It didn't take him long to find the record of deaths in Fort Douglas. Before that, there were other towns, roughly every 15 to 20 years. The damage had only started to be glimpsed in Fitchburg. In the past, dozens of children had died, slowly, before the Strigo was finished. Dean called in the afternoon, when his stomach was protesting that lunchtime was already hours past. He gave Dean a quick rundown. "How far back does this thing go?" "I don't know," Sam admitted. "I've tracked it back to Black River Falls back in the 1890s. Real horror show." He scrolled the microfilm, trying to find the date of the first reports, and stopped at a faded picture of doctors crowded around a patient's bed. "Fuck me," he said. "Sam! I got a photo here of Heidecker attending a sick kid."
"Yeah?"
"From 1893. "Son of a—" Dean cut himself off, drawing an enraged breath. "You still at the hospital?"
"Looking at him,"
Dean said, every word black with fury.
"Don't do anything,"
Sam said, knowing that if he needed to say it, then a warning was useless.
"I'll be right there."
Dean didn't attack Heidecker at the hospital, though. He just brought Michael's mother back to the motel and was sitting in their room when Sam returned. Sam went to him, pulling him up for better inspection, and checked to see that he wasn't injured, even though that was stupid. Dean would have been arrested if he tried anything at the hospital.
"You didn't..."
Dean was too mad at the Striga to react much to Sam's manhandling.
"I'm not going to shoot up a pediatrics ward, and I wasn't armed, so I couldn't even if I wanted to. Anyway, it wouldn't have done it any good. The bastard's bulletproof until it opens its goddamn mouth to eat."
"Okay, what now?" Dean pulled away, rubbing the back of his neck with his hand. "The Striga works through siblings. It means Michael's next. We gotta talk to him, get his help."
"You want us to use the kid as bait?"
"It was a good idea. It just wasn't a Dean idea."
"We've got to catch it somehow, or more kids are going to die."
A muscle jumped in Dean's jaw.
"We let this thing go, it's going to keep killing. Now and every time it gets hungry. Over 100 years already."
It had the sound for rehearsed justification.
"Are you sure?" Sam would have sworn that Dean would do just about anything to think up an alternative. Curl under the covers of the kid's bed and impersonate him, at least. As he thought about it, that plan was obviously insufficient. A creature like the Striga would sense life force, and that wouldn't work. Dad sent me here to fix my mistake. Oh, this day just kept improving. What are you talking about? Sam demanded. Dean turned his back to Sam, his arms pulled in tight to his sides. I'm the one whose fault it is. All those kids, they're hurt 'cause of me. What? Dean! Dean! You've been messed up since we got here. Talk to me. He begged, closing the distance between them and sliding his hand down Dean's back. Dean twitched, and Sam backed off a few inches. He needed me for the hunt, Dean said at last, his voice back to a kid's wavering tones. The words spilled from him like water, fast and colorless. He needed me to draw it out. I was supposed to wait until it started feeding. I swore to him I was strong enough, but I got scared. I couldn't let it. I called him too soon, and when he fired it, it ran, and I was crying, and he went to me instead of following it. He took me out of Fort Douglas to a friend's house. By the time he got back, the Striga had disappeared. Just gone. Gone until now. He never talked about it, but I let him down, and he knew it. He told me what I had to do, and I fucked it up. And now these kids are going to die unless Michael steps up to do what I couldn't. Dean, Sam began. Don't. But just because Dean's mind was made up, didn't do squat to convince Michael. When they finally went to find Michael in the motel office, he was, to put it mildly, unwilling to listen. Dean's insistence that pneumonia was not the culprit in Asher's coma freaked Michael out from word one. Anybody could have heard that Dean was about ready to break down. Quickly enough, Michael stood and backed to the door, ready to flee. You're crazy! Just go away or I'm calling the cops! I had a brother, Dean said, his voice harsh and deformed under the pressure, and Michael froze with one hand out towards the counter phone. I would have done anything to keep him safe, but it failed. Dean sucked in air, ragged. Michael swayed fractionally towards him, drawn as anyone would be to Dean's tonal vulnerability, his commitment. Listen to me, Michael. This thing came through your window, and it attacked your brother. I've seen it. I know what it looks like. Michael closed his eyes. It has this long black robe? You saw it, didn't you? Dean asked, his voice gently like a summer storm's sudden ending. I thought it was a nightmare. Dean breathed out through his nose. I wish to hell I didn't have to tell you this. Sometimes nightmares are real. Why are you telling me? Michael was visibly a kid now, wanting someone else to take care of the problem. His mom still at the hospital. Maybe his missing father. Sam felt a strange urge to reach out and give him a hug. That wasn't what they had to give him, though. We need your help, Dean admitted. And then it fell apart. Michael was having none of it, still terrified of what he'd seen. He didn't listen when Dean tried to use his anger over his brother's illness, then warned him that other kids were still in danger. Sam had to pull him away when he saw that Dean was about 15 seconds from taking out his own guilt on the kid. Sam had nothing against emotional blackmail in theory, but it was plain that neither Dean nor Michael would benefit from further conversation. Well, that sucked, Dean said, when Sam had hustled him back to their room. You can't expect a kid to just do something like that, Sam told him, not meaning Michael. Dean ignored him. Now what? Maybe we can figure out a way to fake a tasty life force, Sam said, without much conviction. They didn't even know what the Striga sensed, not well enough to simulate it. Someone rapped on the door. Sam's shoulders sagged involuntarily. It was probably Michael's mother, come to tell them to get the hell away from her remaining kid. He was shocked to see Michael standing outside instead. If you kill it, will Asher get better? He demanded. Dean rubbed his fingers over his mouth. Honestly, we don't know. You would have done this for your little brother? Dean swallowed. If I could have traded myself, I didn't have the chance. But yeah, I would have done anything for him. Michael stood a little straighter. Me too. I'm in. John Winchester's plan had depended on waiting for Dean's outcry. Sam and Dean had a night vision camera, so they wouldn't need to rely on Michael's sense of timing. Dean promised him 1,000 times that they'd be one room over, just the thickness of a wall away, waiting with their guns. Dean talked him through what would happen, rolling off the bed and crawling under it, staying down to avoid any chance of being shot, preparing for the noise of the guns. In his careful instructions, Sam recognized the man who'd taught him how to hunt, and began to think that Dean was going to make it through this. When the Striga came, it was worse than Sam had imagined. A hooded figure of pure shadow, corpse bony. It hovered over Michael, breathing in, and its mouth filled with light, like something spilling in from another, more horrible dimension. They burst in, firing, and the Striga flew backwards with the force of the bullets. Michael was nowhere to be seen. Sam trusted he was under the bed, and they stalked quickly to where the Striga was lying on the floor. Sam knelt, using his gun to prod at the thing's all-concealing robe. Sam didn't even see it rise up. It was that fast. It knocked him back into a chest of drawers, his lower back hitting so hard he felt something snap. Then it shoved Dean, sending him flying backwards across the room until he smacked into the opposite wall, smashing a picture in its frame before crashing to the floor. The Striga was right behind him, wrapping its blackened, twig-like figures around Dean's neck as it opened its mouth again. It planned to finish what it had started years ago, Sam realized. Dean's outstretched hand flailed for his gun as his face started to gray out in the unnatural white glow. A noise of pure rage came from Sam's mouth. He reached out with his mind, twisting the Striga's head away from Dean and shut it between the eyes. "Are you all right?" he demanded. Dean panted and, once he'd retrieved his gun, gave Sam a thumbs up with his free hand. Sam limped over, helping Dean to his feet, and then as one, they each pumped 3 more iron rounds into it. Like that, it collapsed into nothingness, leaving only its black robes. "Holy shit!" Michael said from behind them. "Just like Star Wars!" They both turned to look at the boy, Dean's raised eyebrow probably a match for Sam's expression. "I told you to stay under the bed," Dean said, but there was no heat in it. Michael came closer, and Dean put a hand on his shoulder as he stared down at the fabric, finally daring to stick out his foot to brush against it. He nodded then. "Can we call the hospital and ask them to check on Asher?" Dean smiled down at him and ruffled his hair. Michael didn't even try to get away. "You think the kid's gonna be all right, now that he knows it's out there?" Sam asked, as Dean stuck his arm out the window, waving goodbye. Dean checked the rearview mirror. "Dunno. Look how well-adjusted we are." He chewed on the side of his mouth for a moment. "Anyway, he knows he's a hero. That's gotta be good for him, right?" "You know there was nothing you could have done to save your brother, right?" Dean didn't even twitch. It was as if Sam hadn't spoken. "Dean, even your father has spent 20 years looking for a weapon against the demon that killed him and your mom." At that, Dean's eyes widened a little. Maybe it was just that Sam had offered no hint of disrespect for John Winchester. "What you do, what we do, it's the right thing, but it's not because you need to make up for anything." In the silence that followed, Sam had plenty of opportunity to think about his own ledger. 15 minutes later, Dean spoke. "It's not what it feels like." That night, Dean found them a motel in Michigan, decorated entirely in shades of burnt orange and red-brown. Velveteen bed covers patterned in paisley, beads for room dividers, stained glass wall sconces. Even the bumpy, floral-shaped anti-slip decals in the bottom of the tub, which itself was the color of badly curdled milk, were red and brown. "It's like the 70s threw up in here," Sam said, amazed, as he investigated. Dean chuckled, and Sam heard the bed creak as he threw himself down. When Sam emerged from the bathroom, Dean was stretched out on top of the covers. He still had his boots on, his legs crossed at the ankles, and his hands loose on top of his stomach, as he stared up at the stuccoed ceiling. "I never asked," Dean said, as Sam headed towards his bag. "But you don't have any brothers or sisters, do you?" Sam froze. He hadn't lied to Dean about his past in months, largely because he hadn't said anything at all. Actually, it was kind of screwed up," he said. "My dad, he took in a bunch of other kids, but they were never... I kind of hated them." Dean made a vague, humping noise. When Sam dared to look, he was still facing up towards the ceiling. "I always wondered," Dean said eventually, "what it would have been like, growing up with a little brother. When Sammy came home from the hospital, I threw a fit, told my mom to take him back. But 3 days later, Dad says, I was his biggest fan." He had to tell Dean about Father now. Confession was only going to get harder. He could say he'd fled. He decided he wanted to switch sides. It was true in all but chronology. "Dean," he began. But Dean was rolling off the bed, standing, grabbing hungrily at him, his sweet hot mouth stopping the words that Sam didn't want to say. They were on a 2-lane highway in West Virginia when the tape deck and the engine went out together, like the whole system had been fried by an EMP. Dean cursed as if invective alone might power the car and guided it gently off the road, bumping over gravel until they came to a stop just in front of a stand of trees. They were both out of their seats, headed to the weapons in the trunk as soon as the car gave its final jolt. "Did you lose any time?" Sam joked as he checked his clip. "Time's a universal invariant," Dean said right back, scanning the road. "Freaky electrical phenomena might be a sign of alien abduction on the X-Files, but they weren't that lucky." "Listen," Dean said, turning his head slowly back and forth. His gun was at his side, his finger tight on the trigger, barrel aimed at the ground. Sam didn't hear anything, not even leaves rustling, the air heavy and dead around them. In the distance, he saw a black swarm of birds winging away from them. Step by step, they backed up until their shoulder blades touched. "In a minute," Dean said, the vibration of his voice running through their bodies. "I'm gonna pop the hood. You gotta..." Between one blink and the next, Ava was there, standing in the road, strands of hair whipping around her face, even though there was no wind. Her hands were hidden in the pockets of her dark blue denim jacket. Dean felt himself stiffening and swiveled, so they were shoulder to shoulder, facing her. She looked fabulous. As the phantom wind died down, her brown, shoulder-length hair curved around her face like a scimitar. Her light eyes shone under eyebrows that were perfect arcs. Her softly rounded cheeks were slightly pinked with exertion, and her plump mouth was a dusky rose that made her look, even with all Sam knew, just a little bit vulnerable. Along with the jacket, nipped in to highlight her waist, she was wearing tight jeans and low-heeled boots. He remembered a couple of weeks when the second most powerful urge in his life was the one to fuck her. "Sam," she said, chipper as ever. "Ava." He tucked his gun into the back of his jeans. Any bullet she saw coming wasn't going to be the one to kill her. Dean didn't lower his gun, but he jerked his eyes over towards Sam. "Who the fuck are you?" he asked. She smiled, soft and a little secretive. "Didn't he tell you?" "Be careful," Sam warned Dean urgently. She raised her hand. The gun ripped itself from Dean's hand. Sam caught it before it hit the ground and sent it under the car, where Ava would have a harder time grabbing it to use against Dean. Dean shook out his no-doubt stinging fingers. Abruptly, Latin began spewing from him like soda from a shaken can. Ava giggled. "That's sweet, but I'm not a demon." Dean stumbled to a halt. There was a moment of perfect silence, during which Sam realized that a battle to the death right now would impose an unacceptable risk to Dean. Therefore, Ava was going to do it. There was no more leeway for lies. "Dean, Ava and I grew up together," She's another psychic, like me. Dean was stone beside him, and he didn't dare look. Oh, did I make it in time for true confessions? She examined Dean, as if she was imagining whether he'd clashed with her decor. What Sammy means, I think, is that he and I and all the others spent our young lives like scorpions in a bottle, crawling all over each other. Until, for some reason, our father sent him to recruit you, which, by the way, how's that going? Your father, Dean repeated, eyeing in on the key term. Ava shrugged prettily. Our father, the father of lies, the angel of death, the impudent one. Epithets can be so cruel. Even with his eyes fixed on Ava, Sam could tell that Dean was connecting the dots. Sam had warned him that there might be other demon-targeted psychics out there, carefully laid the groundwork for it. Dean, I will explain everything, I swear to you. The important thing right now is that Ava is here to kill us, okay? He'd opened a whole new vein of weakness for her to exploit. There was no way around that, but it was too tasty for her not to spend some time gloating about it. Sam backed up a few steps, giving himself a better range of motion and making it easier for him to see both Dean and Ava. Ava shifted, spreading her legs and settling into a fighting stance. Her hands left her pockets, apparently empty. He remembered how he'd been able to wrap both of them in one of his. She'd seemed so vulnerable then, such a contrast to his size. "Am I the last one left?" he asked her. She tossed her head. "You've got to know the answer to that." She glanced over at Dean. "But for those of you who are just joining us, yeah, I killed Jake last week. Now it's two little Indians out in the sun." Sam raised his eyebrows, letting her see his surprise. "I was pretty sure you'd let Claudia live," he told her, "if only to have someone to lord it over." She pushed her hair back behind one ear. "There's 6 billion people on this stinking planet. For now, anyway. I'm sure I can find someone to gossip with." "You..." Dean interrupted, his voice rusty. "You've been killing the other psychic kids?" She turned her head to focus on him. "Well, not just me, but yes, I do hold the world record. I'm guessing Sam didn't tell you how he was the first of all of us to start cutting down the competition." Dean blinked slowly, like he'd been concussed. Before Ava could decide to start the fight, Sam did. With one mental push, he shoved Dean back, sending him skidding over the hood of the car out of sight. Then, taking advantage of Ava's surprise, he used the TK like a giant fist, hammering her straight down. Ava cried out in fear and shock, but an invisible shield snapped up before he'd done more than startle her. Sam felt the rebound from the blow in his own hands. He hadn't known that was possible. Ava brought her hands up to her temples. Sam recognized the tell and prepared to fend off her shadow demons. The one she brought up this time was a hell of a lot bigger than the poppet-sized pit bull he remembered. It tore at him with smoky fingers like knives, and he spent a bad 10 seconds pushing it away, the thing sliding around his mental jabs like it was made of snakes, before a better solution occurred to him. He wasn't as fast as Dean, who could rap out a rituale romanum at 300 words a minute, but the demon cringed back as soon as he began, and fled as he advanced on Ava. Who threw up her hands and emitted a fucking fireball at him? He ducked and rolled, catching only at the edge of his heat on one leg, bouncing back to his feet. Now they were both on the empty road, 20 feet from the stalled-out car. "Good one," he called out, struggling not to pant visibly. "You missed a lot. If he could distract you long enough to throw a knife..." The gunshot made them both flinch, just as the bullet splashed into her shield and flared like a flower as it disintegrated. "Stay back, Dean!" he yelled. He couldn't protect them both. He was an idiot for not thinking of shields before, relying too much on Dean's offensive measures rather than his own potential. Then he was busy dodging a stream of fireballs, smaller than the first, but hot enough to crisp his hair, even when they missed him by a couple of feet. After the first few, it was like the drills he'd done with tennis balls, pushing them off course with his mind, except that this time, he had to turn every one in the opposite direction, making sure that none of them went behind him towards where Dean was. Something about shields. The heavier boom of Dean's shotgun startled Ava into flinching. The rock salt splattered against the invisible barrier 6 feet from her chest, flaring into black holes with yellow edges. It was actually working, eating through the psychic wall that curved around her. Ava yelped as Dean fired again. Sam's knife was already in the air, heading straight for the largest collection of holes. It came to a halt 2 feet in front of Ava's face, twisting slowly before she let it drop. Then Dean yelled in surprise, his voice coming closer as he was dragged past Sam. Sam grabbed at him, imagining his will as a mountain blocking the path. Dean screamed, twisting against the grip of Ava's power, a rope wrapping around his chest and shoulders. His muscles were twisting, tearing in her grasp, and Ava didn't care whether they ripped him apart between them like two dogs fighting over a scrap of meat. Helpless, Sam let go, and Dean tumbled forward into the protection of Ava's already healing shields. He lay at her feet, his limbs tangled, his feet twitching uselessly. "So it's true," she said, kicking Dean casually over onto his back with one pointed boot. "You finally found something to care about other than defying Father. I guess I just wanted to see it for myself." Dean's nose was bleeding, and there was something funny about the way his left arm was lying on the concrete. "Well, it's been fun, but you're really out of practice." Ava raised her hands again, safe against counterattack behind her shields. And then he saw it. Ava had spent the better part of a year perfecting her skills, but she hadn't spent that time hunting things that mostly came out of the ground. He sent his power down, below his feet and through the dirt beneath the road, punching back up behind her and slamming her forward like a cue ball hit on a brake. She flew through the air, fetching up against him with a force that rocked him. He was ready, grabbing at her neck even as he took an involuntary step back. The shock had dissipated, her psychic barrier, and now unless she could reform it right around her skin, she burned, like holding a live coal. He fought off the illusion, but his fingers relaxed involuntarily, cringing away. Now she had her hands on his chest, pushing her own TK into him. He could feel her squeezing at his lungs. He tightened his grip on her shoulders, imagining her heart swelling, exploding in her chest. Dean popped up behind her like a target in a shooting game, sending a shock of terror into Sam, and then Dean's whole body lurched forward, pressing Ava between them. Ava made a gurgling noise. Sam felt a tearing pain in his abdomen. Ava sagged against him but didn't fall, her mouth going slack. He felt wetness, blood, soaking into his shirt, running down his waist into his jeans. Her hands scrabbled at his arms, her nails catching on his shirt sleeves. Her soft mouth, her soft face, blurring as if they were disappearing underwater. With his last strength, he pushed her away. The pain increased. She fell, landing oddly, toppling over to one side. Because of the hilt, the knife hilt embedded in her back, he realized. Sam's knife. Dean had stabbed her, except that the blade had gone all the way straight through and out her stomach into Sam. The razor tip of it poked through her shirt, as red and gleaming as shark's guts. Her arms were flung out. He could see the inside of her right wrist, blue-veined, where the blood was probably moving feebly, cells striving to get more oxygen. He looked up. Dean's eyes were blazing, lacking only a lighter to set him on fire. Dean knew to the millimeter how long that knife was. Sam pressed his hands to his middle, trying to staunch the flow enough to let himself think. When had he gone to his knees? He'd imagined being the last one left so many times. Mostly it was Ava on the ground in front of him, Ava or Jake. She'd never looked quite so awkward in his fantasies. He closed his eyes and let the black cloud of unconsciousness take him.